Well, let's go back to 1 Samuel for a last time in a present series. 1 Samuel. 1 Samuel 28. I'll read again verse 6 and 7. 1 Samuel 28. Saul is coming to the buffers now, at the end of the road, and facing this massive Philistine army. Verse 3-5 says, he was afraid. Terror filled his heart. He inquired of the Lord, but the Lord did not answer him by dreams or Urim or prophets. Saul then said to his attendants, find me a woman who is a medium, so that I may go and inquire of her. Now I have to say that this is a pretty grim passage. 1 Samuel does not end on a high note. Indeed, when I was thinking about the kids' address, particularly in Kyle, I was thinking it's Mother's Day. What inspiration can I get in this passage for Mother's Day? And the Witch of Endor really didn't help very much. And Saul himself, of course, we've been following his fortunes for a while, and we've probably got to like him less and less as the book has gone on. In fact, the whole book of 1 Samuel is not really that encouraging. David provides probably the best relief, and Samuel, of course, in the book. Many of the other characters are pretty depressing. And I was thinking, well, if I were to sum up the 1 Samuel in one word, the word barren was the word that came to mind. We began in 1 Samuel, remember, with a barren woman, and that was Hannah. Hannah, from whom Samuel was born. The priesthood at the time in 1 Samuel, the priesthood of Eli and his sons Hophni and Phinehas, was a barren priesthood. And that whole priesthood ends up throughout the book being wiped out, first of all in battle with the Philistines, and then in at the hands of Saul. That whole priestly town of Nob was destroyed by Saul. The religion of Israel was barren. Remember how attached they were to the Ark of the Covenant, but not to God himself, trusting in religious symbols rather than in the God behind them. And then the first king of Israel had a barren reign. Saul, his reign is a reign of personal decline and of national decline. And the terrain of the last half of the book that we've been in for a few weeks, a terrain where David was in for several years, the terrain of desert, is barren as well, where Saul is chasing David and trying to destroy him. Well, that's life, unfortunately. Sometimes people and nations spend long periods in very barren places, don't they? Maybe you're in a barren place in your own life just now. You put a brave face on it, but for one reason or another, you're feeling in your heart pretty bleak. What I hope we have seen in 1 Samuel is that God's grace is always available. Wherever things are barren and looking pretty grim, there's always light available. And God bless you, ladies.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks for joining us. Take care, that's fine. There's always, you know, even at the lowest point, there's always the possibility of finding grace. And actually, as we come into 2 Samuel, things will get much brighter, because David will be on the throne and things will look much better. But we're at the end of Saul's life, and since we're going through the book, we're going to cover it. I have to say, this passage would not be one I'd naturally be drawn to preach from, because of its bleakness. We're finding here the fulfillment of David's own words back in chapter 26. He said to Abishai, remember, the Lord himself will strike Saul, chapter 26, verse 10. Either Saul's time will come and he will die, or he will go into battle and perish. And that's what's happening here. And there are people whose lives should serve as a warning to us. Some people are, their lives are actually a warning to us. There are people in our community here, and their lives are actually a warning to us. You know, what happens if we make wrong choices? We become addicted in some way or something like that. We can see their decline because of the bad choices they've made. And it's the same in the Bible. The Bible is from time to time presenting us with people whose lives are a warning to us. And Saul is like that. Warnings are not popular, but they're needed. And we need to hear this warning today. Imagine what it would be like if every time there was a road accident, instead of the wrecks being towed away and crushed or whatever, they were left at the scene of the accident. Imagine if all the wrecks of all the car crashes were left where the crashes had occurred on our roads, just at the side of the road. It would be interesting, wouldn't it? It would certainly warn us where the worst places were to drive. It would tell us where the accident black spots were. And as a result, we'd probably drive more carefully with them. It'd probably actually help us to drive better. Well, here we have a wreck at the end of 1 Samuel that's left, as it were, by the roadside of life. The wreck of Saul at a well-known accident black spot in the Bible. The accident black spot, which we could call rejection of God. What happens when you just wholesale reject God from your life? And it's a warning to us. It's a wreck, it's a bad wreck, and we don't want to end up like this. So what can we learn from Saul's end? Now the action here takes place, as verse 4 says, in places like Shunem and just a couple of miles away at Gilboa, the two camps of the Philistines and the Israelites, and in verse 7, Endor, which is just a couple of miles away too. Just a little compact group of places that are named here, which are pretty far north from where we've been. Remember, we've been in the south of Israel, in the south of Judah, in the desert, Ziklag, where David's living. It's all in the south. Remember, David had marched with the Philistines up to Aphek, and then he'd come back to Ziklag. That's what we were looking at last week. Well, the Philistines continued to march from Aphek another 40 miles north till they came to Shunem, where they met with the Israelite army, and they fought on Mount Gilboa. So we're up in the north here, and the narrative, as I said, takes a break from what's happening with David. And you might be confused just reading, well, why, who's going where and so on. But we're looking at David, and then we go to Saul, and then we go back to David, and then we go back to Saul again. But I've kind of read David's bit and studied that, and now we're finishing off with Saul. So let's examine the wreckage. Let's see what went wrong. Well, the first thing is, if we look at verse 3, at the beginning of Saul's reign, things weren't so bad. We hear about Samuel, who's dead by now, but when Samuel was living and guiding Saul as king, things were much better. Saul, verse 3, had expelled the mediums and spiritists from the land, those who were leading people astray to consult the dead. So you can begin well, but under the influence of bad motives, bad controlling motives, you can end up very far from where you began. And that's what happens with Saul. Saul begins well. He began his reign well. But then he began to become powerful. And he began to enjoy power. And he began to want to hold on to power. And he began to disobey God's guidance and do things his way. And then when God raised up someone else to take his place, David, he began to try to destroy David. He became jealous. So his lust for power and his jealousy were powerful motivations in his life. And they took him from the good beginning of his life to a place far, far away, unrecognizable from where he began. Now that happens to people. You know, people can begin in our communities, brought up in great families, brought up where love and community has been at the center of what they've known. They can be taught about Jesus Christ and his mercy and love and get a really great start in life. And then they get out into the world and they begin to get gripped by some other motivation. It might be the desire to make money. It might be some addiction that takes hold of their lives. Some driving force in their lives. Maybe they just want to be popular or whatever. And they can end up very far away from where they've begun. That could happen to us. We could be here this morning and we're actually quite a long way in our journey from where you would expect we would be, given the beginning we had in life. We don't really notice the drift. We don't really notice that we've kind of gone a long way off the road. And the only way we're going to notice is if we try to connect with God. I noticed that when I was 18 years old and I had travelled a long way from where I should have been spiritually and morally. And when I did try to connect with God, I was far, far away from him. And it was scary. Fortunately, God heard my prayer for mercy. But if you've tried to connect with God recently and God seems very, very far away, maybe it's because you've just been drifting under the influence of perhaps your own desires, your own motivations that have taken you away from God. And you don't really notice it's happening. But maybe it's time to pay heed before it takes you too far. Sometimes people around us can see what's happening. They can see that we're changing. They can see that we're gripped by some lust, some desire, some addiction. But they can't really say anything. It wasn't easy for people to say things to Saul. He was the king after all. And so people can go on in an illusion of things being fine with themselves. And when the truth finally forces itself in upon them, as it does here through Samuel, it's absolutely devastating. And it was devastating for Saul. When suddenly, perhaps there's a bad diagnosis or a broken marriage or a crisis of some kind. And then people suddenly recognize, what have I become? How did I get here? And it was just through the persistent drift caused by a wrong driving emotion, motivation, desire in our lives. So we need to think about that in our own lives, and perhaps it's our place to take friends aside or family aside sometimes and say to them, you know, do you see where this is going to take you? And hopefully lovingly and gently help them to hear a warning before they end up, like Saul, very far away from what is good and true. That's what happens with Saul. Under the controlling motivation of his jealousy of David and his lust for power. However, even the most backslidden, the most reprobate of people, the most distant in their journey from God, people will, when the crash is about to happen, turn to God. Nearly everyone will turn to God when the crisis comes upon them. People who have never prayed will pray. Saul and David both do this. Last week we looked at David. Remember, he was in great distress, it said. chapter 30, verse 6. And he found strength in the Lord his God. That was a great, great passage. Same words in verse 15 here. I'm in great distress. Same words, exactly. Saul's in great distress. And he also, verse 6, inquired of the Lord. Very, very different people. One of them has practiced closeness to God. That's David. And so in the crisis he can find God. The other one, Saul, has practiced rejecting God. But still in the crisis he turns to God. That's really, truly staggering. But that's what people do. Most people will do that when things really come to it. We've seen that with the plane that's disappeared and the Malaysian Airlines plane. We've seen lots of examples on the newscasts of people praying who don't normally pray. Now, it's a great blessing, isn't it? It's a great blessing we can turn to God in the crisis. We're so thankful for that. It's a great blessing if we have the opportunity to turn to God, because not everyone has that. I mean, the crisis can come upon us so quickly that we don't even get time to pray. And it can all be over. The crash can be over too quickly. But it is a great blessing when we get the chance to pray to God. And most people will take that chance when the crisis comes. However, what is Saul really doing here in verse 6 and in verse 7? He inquired of the Lord. He prayed. Doesn't get an answer. Now, does Saul say, I have to have an answer from God? Is that what he does? Does he say, I have to meet God? I have to find God here? No, he doesn't. He says, oh, well, fair enough. God's not answering me. Find me a medium, he says. Find me a necromancer. Find me someone who can bring up a spirit for me. And maybe that spirit, we'll call up Samuel. Maybe he can help. People who normally in their lives ignore God, when they do pray to God, it's not God they want. It's just the help that God can give them. Now, God knows if we're doing that. God knows if we don't want him. Saul did not find God. God knows, though, if we really do want him. If we come to God and we think it's God or I'm bust. You know, if we think I've got to find God here. In that situation, we will find him. When we look to the giver rather than just the gift. When we look to the helper rather than just the help. Saul, you see, hates God. And he hasn't stopped hating God even though he's inquiring of God. All he wants is for God to tell him what to do. He doesn't want God. That happens when people drift far from God, and it's a warning of what happens, that it's not God they really seek. And when people are in that situation of seeking God's help but not wanting God, they generally don't find him. And people will pray. They'll pray in the crisis. They'll pray when the crash is about to happen. But it'll be like verse 6. The Lord will not answer. And Saul says it himself in verse 15. He says, God has turned away from me. And people will complain, of course, to say, you know, isn't it terrible? You know, so much for your God. I was in a terrible place and this terrible thing was happening and I prayed and God didn't hear me and God didn't answer my prayer. So much for God. So much for his love. I don't even believe he exists, they'll say. But wait a minute. Why should God answer? Why should God answer Saul? I mean, Saul, after all, you remember, and you will, we've been following this last few chapters. Saul has been trying to kill David for years. Who is David? David is the man chosen by God. He's like the representative of God in the Israelite community to be the king after Saul. So Saul is showing his hatred of God by trying to destroy David. Not only that, remember, he wiped out the priests. The priests in the town of Nob, Ahimelech and his sons. He wiped them out. He killed them all. The priests of the Lord. So, why should God hear Saul when Saul has been practicing the hatred of God in his life? And God knows what's in Saul's heart. Saul will be as happy to get an answer from a necromancer as from God. His heart has become hard, and he has no place for God. So why would God answer a man who continues to reject him? See, this is not the inquiring of a man who is saying, "I am sorry for what I've been and done, Lord." This is not a man seeking God's mercy. This is a man who hates God, going to his enemy and saying, "I need your help." That's what happens, sadly, for many people when they do pray. And when they don't get an answer from God, what happens? Verse 7. "Find me a woman who's a medium." They'll clutch at anything. A lot of people in our society today have tried prayer. People who reject God generally in their lives, but they thought, well, better try this. And they haven't got anywhere. So what happens? Well, they try something else. They'll try a medium. They'll try spiritualism. They'll try to go to the fortune teller, have their tarot cards read. They'll try anything vaguely religious. And the actual result is they get themselves into an even worse place. And the crash is going to be even more horrific. Now, to balance that, we have to say that if we seek God in our crisis, we will find him. If it's God we seek, we will find him. That's one of the wonderful messages that we find right through the Bible. People who are in crisis, who are about to crash, if they actually seek God himself, they will find him. God knows their hearts. If our hearts are open to meeting with him and to coming to terms with him and to finding his mercy, then he knows that. See, Saul came to God and his prayer is basically, "Lord, help me. Help me to get out of this mess so that I can continue to carry on my life the way it is now." That's what he's looking for. "So I can carry on hating you. Help me to get out of this mess." Well, that's not a prayer. If Saul had prayed, "Lord, you know how I've lived my life, how I have turned away from you, I have killed your priests, I have sought to kill David, I have disobeyed you, and I have come to this place really because of my own failure as a human being. Forgive me, Lord. I want now to know you. I want to know your love in my life." Then God will hear a prayer like that. And in the New Testament we pray, you know, "Lord, I've lived my life and I've not bothered really about Jesus. I've gone to church even. But you know that I've kept you at a distance. I've kept you at arm's length. I've had a bit of religion. But now I'm sorry, Lord. I'm sorry that I've done that. I'm sorry that I have persistently gone my own way. And I've even made church part of that so that it suited me. I'm sorry that I haven't engaged with you in my life. And I see now how far away from you it's taken me. But I thank you, Lord, that you do want to know me. And you've shown me that by sending me your Son, Jesus Christ, to pay for my sins. Please, have mercy on me now. You know, when we come to God seeking Him, we will find Him. In the prophet Joel, there's a beautiful passage after Israel's sins have been described in Joel chapter 2 and verse 12. God says, okay, you see how far you are from me, but even now, return to me with all your heart, with fasting and weeping and mourning. Rend your heart, not just your garments, and turn to me, return to the Lord your God, for he is gracious and compassionate, slow to anger and abounding in love. Even now, says God, I will hear you. So I have to remind you of that. But let's just finish now with this warning ringing in our ears. Proverbs 29 verse 1. A man who remains stiff-necked after many rebukes will suddenly be destroyed without remedy. That's Saul. Samuel says to Saul, after he's been called up from Sheol, from the place of the dead, verse 16, why do you consult me? Now the Lord has turned away from you and become your enemy. The Lord has done what he predicted through me. The Lord has torn the kingdom out of your hands and given it to one of your neighbors, to David. Because you did not obey the Lord or carry out his fierce wrath against the Amalekites, the Lord has done this to you today. The Lord will hand over both Israel and you to the Philistines, and tomorrow you and your sons will be with me. And way back in chapter 15, Samuel had said, chapter 15 verse 28, to Saul, the Lord has torn the kingdom of Israel from you today and has given it to one of your neighbors, to one better than you. Saul had many warnings of the impending crash, many opportunities for mercy. But the nature of warnings is that if we don't heed them, there is always a last warning. And this is Saul's last warning. The crash is now inevitable. And it's really moving. In fact, I felt a lump in my throat as I was preparing this, just thinking, oh, Saul, 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 how sad. We've been following you and, you know, we don't like some of what you are, but did you have to turn out like this? Did you have to keep on rejecting God? Did you have to? Why, Saul? Why? And you see this giant of a man, remember, he's such a tall figure, verse 20, falling full length on the ground, filled with fear. Because of Samuel's words, his strength was gone. And the next day, his life was gone. And it's as though we can hear Jesus as he says it over Jerusalem. As though he says it over Saul. Oh, Saul, Saul, Saul. How often I wanted to gather you as a hen gathers her chicks in under her wings. But you did not want it. And now, your house is left desolate. So we're not ending on a high point today. It's not like 1 Samuel has a happy ending. It has, in a sense, with David, most certainly. But with Saul, it's a warning. It's a car wreck, as it were, lying at the side of the roadside of life. A human wreck. It's a warning to us. It's a warning for us to seek God's mercy while we can, to seek God Himself and His mercy, so that if we are drifting from God, we can come back to Him and live our lives in his blessing and in his fellowship, so that when the end of life comes, our lives are not a crash like Saul, not a tragedy, not a wreck, but our lives are able to end with triumph. O death, where is your sting? O grave, where is your victory? Amen.